Latest mock draft. We did 1 through 16 yesterday. We are going to do 17 through 32 today, but I did not do these picks by myself. I did them with my co-host, Corey Kinnan. Corey, besides Jerry Jones scheduling a tennis tournament and not allowing the Shrine Bowl to practice in Frisco, now instead going to UNT, how are you doing other than that?
I'm good, man. Here's where I'm at. I'm still going to go. And I have, you know, friends who are lucky enough that are renting cars that I can carpool with them. It's going to be four nights where that I'm going to get to sleep in a bed by myself and without being interrupted by screaming children. So, you know, I'm going to have the time of my life still. So as much as I love my kids, to be able to sleep through the night for once in my life is going to be, it's going to be glorious. And, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready to finish out this mock draft and get this party started.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll go through 1 through 16 real quick, and then we'll head on to 17 through 32. At number one, the Tennessee Titans went Abdul Carter. And I was talking to my Tennessee Titans buddy about this today, and this is absolutely what he wants. He wants nothing else other than this to happen. Shedeur Sanders, number two, to the Cleveland Browns. New York Giants at number three go Travis Hunter. The New England Patriots at number four go Luther Burton. Number five, the Jacksonville Jaguars go Will Johnson. Number six, the Las Vegas Raiders go Cameron Ward. Number seven, the New York Jets. And I thought about this one more today. Draft Mason Graham. And what a disgusting... What it reminds me of is no matter how bad the Jets are, they're going to be a pain in the ass to play the way that the old Redskins were. They were the Redskins at that time. That's the only reason why I'm saying that name. With Jonathan Allen and Deron Payne and Chase Young and Montez Sweat. Like, that foursome made life so difficult for offensive linemen and quarterbacks that even though their teams weren't very good, they were a pain to play. And I think that's what would happen in New York as well. Plus the great back end that New York has. Anyways, number eight, the Carolina Panthers went with Shamar Stewart. Number nine, the New Orleans Saints. Teteroa McMillan. I have to look at it like three times every single time before I say it. Number 10, the Chicago Bears select Will Campbell. Number 11, the San Francisco 49ers selected Nick Skorton. Number 12, the Dallas Cowboys selected Tyler Warren. And number 13, the Miami Dolphins selected Ashton Chanty. Number 14, the Indianapolis Colts select Malachi Starks. At 15, the Atlanta Falcons select Siobhan Revel. Number 16, the Arizona Cardinals select Emeka Egbuka. Now, real quickly, I wanted to bring up the Tyreek stuff in Miami. Mm-hmm. I've kind of had a feeling that Tyreek might be on his way out this year or next year, and then this kind of cemented that. So do you think they would reach for, I mean, is Emeka a reach at this point? And does Emeka fit that offense?
Because I don't think he doesn't run a 4-3.
Well, he doesn't run a 4-3, but I do think his ability over the middle of the field is what that offense really covets even more than and the ability to take hospital balls, because Tua is going to test every single window. And that's the one thing that I do love about Tua Tagovailoa is he will test every middle of the field window that he can. And so, like, maybe at that point we do see Miami go for a wide receiver with the Tyreek Hill stuff. What do you think they could get for Tyreek at this point?
Dude, it's not.
Could they get a second?
I don't.
A third?
I don't think they could, because if you look at his contract, man, like, he's cheap next year. And I think the team that would acquire him would only have to pay him $14 million next year. But then his cap hit in 2026 is $40 million.
Yeah, but I wonder how much of that Miami would eat in the trade.
I mean, you would have to eat at least half of that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Tyreek's going to be 33 in 2026.
And he has a soft tissue injury of some sort. Every single week he misses a couple of snaps. So
this would be a situation where, like, if a team traded for him and Miami doesn't eat that, like, this is a one-year rental and then they'll cut him. before they have to take on, because he's got part of that $40 million cap. It is a $5 million roster bonus. So yeah. That's an easy cut to say, like, well,
yeah,
we'll see you. So I think they would only get like a fourth round pick unless Miami ate $20 million in 2026, which they already have to eat, I think, like $12 million of dead cap to even move him to be.
Yeah.
So.
All right. You want to get to the back half of this?
Let's do it. 17 Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah. Cincinnati Bengals are selecting edge rusher from Tennessee, James Pierce Jr. We think they're probably going to lose out on Sam Hubbard. It is a bit redundant to take two like pass rusher, edge rushers. Now they are going to keep Trey Hendrickson. It would be ridiculous if they got rid of him or let him go. And so James Pierce and Hendrickson, because Hendrickson isn't the best run defender in the world, it's a little bit tough to have two guys who might not be the best run defenders on the edge. But that's kind of what you have to hope Miles Murphy becomes on the edge, is your, you know, two down run defending type. James Pierce Jr. can kind of move around a little bit. He can play a little bit of linebacker because I think he's fluid enough to drop into coverage as well. So, you know, new defensive coordinator, don't really know where they're going to go with this, but I think James Pierce is somebody who you can drop him back into coverage. He can play a little bit of, you know, quote unquote off ball linebacker. It would be Sam. But I do think they need another dangerous edge rusher to take the pressure off of Trey Hendrickson. Also probably going to lose BJ Hill. They're a cheap organization overall. So they need to really spike young talent in the NFL draft, defensively specifically, because as we could see, their defense was an abomination this year, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yes, it was indeed. 18 Seattle Seahawks. This is the last pick that's actually locked into the draft order at this point until the playoffs start happening. 18 Seattle Seahawks, one of the most fun fits that I think of the entire draft class right here. You know, Mike McDonald coming from Baltimore to become the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. And in Baltimore, obviously, he had an absolute weapon on his back end in Kyle Hamilton, who he could stick in the slot and he could play press man. He could stick him in the box and he could fit a gap. He could stick him over the top and he had plenty of range to make any kind of play possible. That guy does not exist in Seattle right now. And so we are going to go ahead and try to find Mike McDonald, his new Kyle Hamilton, and draft Nick Emmanuori here to the Seattle Seahawks with pick number 18.
I love it. Everybody knows how much I love Nick Emmanuori. probably my favorite. My second favorite player in the draft. My favorite player in the draft will not be here in the first round, but just because he's not the best doesn't mean he's not my favorite. Number 19, the Houston Texans. This will be the pick every single time I do a mock draft. It will be nobody else because nobody is probably going to take him before this. It's Tyler Booker, the offensive guard from Alabama. The Texans need a left guard. They've needed a left guard now for a while. It has not worked out with literally anybody that they have thrown in there. And so Tyler Booker is going to be that guy. It's an easy transition. He's already playing left guard there. There was, you know, a little bit of conversation while we were doing this about maybe Kelvin Banks, maybe Jonas Vinay, Bo, if you want him to play guard. There's a lot of different answers here. But this is as plug and play as it gets. And I really, really do enjoy Booker's tape.
Yeah. Stout pass protector. And like, I think I've said it on here before, but like from his 2023 tape to his 2024 tape, it literally looks like he transformed his body over the summer. He looks like a completely different player. 20 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I think the Buccaneers really want a corner, which is funny. We mocked a corner two picks after this and we didn't do one for here for the Buccaneers, but through this point, the buck that we've seen three corners come off the board already. So maybe the value isn't there. And especially their scheme, they like to sit back and off coverage quite a bit. And it's not the corner they're going to picks that we'll get to. It doesn't really fit that anyway. They also need a linebacker. The Buccaneers love high character guys as well. And so we're going to go Jalen Walker right here, Georgia edge rusher / linebacker. He's going to be pretty much full-time off ball, who can do some Frankie Louvu-ish stuff, Sam stuff, and maybe some obvious run situations or even obvious
some dare I say Devin White stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's how they got the most out of Devin White. Was just like, dude, just run, just put your head down and run downhill. Mm-hmm. So when they asked him to start diagnosing stuff is when it got really, really ugly there for Devin White. But I do think that Jalen Walker has a decent floor as an off-ball linebacker too. One, because I think I can see his trigger when he is in like spy situations, which most of his big plays this year came out of spy looks where he was just able to trigger and close the gap in a blink of an eye. And so the ability to diagnose, I think, is there. Obviously, we'll need some fine tuning in the ability to fit gaps consistently as an off-ball linebacker. I do question how he can backpedal, what that transition will look like for him to become a coverage guy. Because at Georgia, any pass situation, they're like, well, just creep on up, just go up. And maybe they do that in Tampa too. But I do think that Jalen Walker will be a player that they would select here if a corner they didn't like is on the board.
Yeah, and I mean, you would have loved it to work out with Devin White beside Lavonte David, but like having Lavonte David there is very nice.
That is somebody,
to have somebody who can, kind of take some of the pressure off. And number 21, this is another one, a lot like the Texans pick, where it just makes a ton of sense. They Broncos fans are clamoring for a tight end. And so we're going to give him a big wide receiver. Colston Loveland, the tight end / wide receiver from Michigan, is going to be the pick here. I comped him kind of to Marquez Colston, the way that he plays. Just a big, physical, loose, not super explosive, but good wingspan, a little crafty after the catch. Colston Loveland, going to Sean Payton.
Marcus Colston Loveland.
Yeah, Marcus Colston Loveland. It is a name. It is a name train. I love it. We're going with Loveland here. I think that he's a really good fit in that offense. You can use him in a bunch of different ways. The only way that you really can't use him or shouldn't use him is in line blocking. So they can run a bunch of 12 personnel. They
sounds like a Sean Payton tight end, if I've ever heard of one. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep him away from in line. Sign a guy who can block and just let Colston Loveland do what he does best.
Love it. Love it. 22 Pittsburgh Steelers. And this is where the cornerback that I was foreshadowing comes off the board here. Azariah Thomas from Florida State. The Steelers cornerback room is abysmal. I think they like Joey Porter Jr. Joey Porter Jr. is really grabby. Outside of that, beyond that, Dante Jackson, pretty stinking bad. Those other guys they have in that corner room have been complete liabilities for them. So I think I would have loved – this is another fit that I love for Emeka Egbuka, but with Egbuka off the board here, I'm going to go ahead and go corner here with Azariah Thomas. Again, a press man savant. And the Steelers, Mike Tomlin wants his defensive backs in your face. That's what he wants them to do, is just get in your face and beat the crap out of them. So, and that's all over Thomas's tape. Maybe he needs a little bit refinement when he is forced to play off man, because he's not asked to do it a whole lot, when he is asked to bail, when he is asked to play with his hips facing the boundary, right? So like some of that stuff will take some getting used to, but like I think his floor is really high because you could just tell him, get up in his face and hit him, and he's going to do it really well early in his career. And that you can play that guy right away. That's not a liability in your system, especially not in Pittsburgh's system. So Azariah Thomas to the Steelers.
Yeah, and then at number 23, the Los Angeles Rams. Listen, I understand that Alaric Jackson has been pretty good this year. And he has been pretty good for Los Angeles. And Los Angeles has kind of just like thrown together an offensive line that has survived over the past couple of seasons. Maybe that's part of Sean McVay's genius. Maybe it's part Matt Stafford hanging in there until the very ever-living last second to deliver passes, because he's an absolute warrior. But we're going to go with a super high ceiling here. Josh Simmons from Ohio State terrifies me, personally. Mm-hmm. But his tape from this year, even though he didn't play anybody really, was the best offensive line tape this year. It's not particularly close for me. He would be OT1 most likely if he played the entire year. He didn't. He didn't play anybody. And that Penn State game last year and some other good competition from last year really weighs heavily on his evaluation for me, because I can't forget that that happened. And so for me, I'm taking a slightly cautious approach. And you can take a cautious approach with a high ceiling guy if you keep somebody like Jackson around and allow Simmons, if he needs to develop into that guy eventually. But I do think the upside with Simmons is one of the better left tackles in the NFL. So they take him here. They get that left tackle of the future for them. And that offense keeps humming.
Yeah. Alaric Jackson is a free agent. So they would have to have some sort of conscious decision, like to give maybe Josh Simmons a gap year, or I think I'm not going to say that on the pod because I'm not sure if that's true, and I'm not going to look it up right now. So I'm going to keep that one in my back pocket. But I do like the fit there. Josh Simmons is my OT one, 14th player on my board. I feel a little bit better because he's the only one that I feel confident in the athletic traits in the class. Like the knee bend, his pad level is so good because his knees are so stinking flexible. His hips are so stinking flexible. One of the only offensive tackles in the class that's actually asked to true pass set. Like the Texas guys, the ball comes out so fast, they're just jump setting everybody. Like you don't see Kelvin Banks like ever actually set. It's one of the most frustrating things. And we'll talk about that more because he's obviously not off the board yet. To most people, that's probably a huge surprise to see that, but we'll get there eventually. 24 to the Packers. Derek Harmon, defensive tackle, Oregon here. The Packers can't generate a pass rush, and I know it feels a little bit overlappy because Derek Harmon and Devontae Wyatt are very, very similar defensive tackles in that they are slippery guys. But I do think that Derek Harmon and the Ohio State game's ugly, but like the Rose Bowl game's a little bit ugly, but I think he is a little more stouter in his upper half and in his core against the run than I anticipated going into his report.
Yes.
I think he can lock out a lot better than I anticipated coming into his report. I think he can extend his hip into a double and take on a double better than I thought he could. Even though he is pretty much known as a pass rushing defensive tackle, I do think he has a decent floor as a run defender as well. And so this is just the second defensive tackle off the board for us here. Mason Graham, Derek Harmon. Yeah. So I'm going to go Derek Harmon to the Green Bay Packers, who need to get a little bit more out of their front four.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the run defending, because as I watched him, I kept being underwhelmed by him as a pass rusher and impressed by him as a run defender. And I think he's more of a disruptive run defender than he is like a consistent guy, because I do think that the trigger's a little bit slow at times with him off of the ball, and then also just how he processes what's in front of him. But when he gets it right, he is devastating because his hands are really good. As a pass rusher, it's just, man, it's a lot of games end up being as pressures.
He's got the benefit of playing next to Jamari Caldwell, who will just make a lane for him. Just
exactly, which is fine, and it shows off the little bit of bend that he has, even at 320, which is impressive. Mm-hmm. But it's not a lot of just pure one-on-one wins on tape.
Yeah.
At number 25, the Los Angeles Chargers go with offensive tackle, offensive guard in this instance, Jonah Savainai out of Arizona. Now, I think we both think athletically he has the ability to play offensive tackle. I think you're a little bit more confident that he has the technical prowess to play offensive tackle as well. I'm more in on him at guard because of the oversetting issues. I just think that his foot speed, athleticism is going to be even better on the interior, because he can just kind of react. He doesn't have to really worry about getting to the arc, because he kind of over worries about it, you know, especially given how good of an athlete he is and how explosive he is out of his stance. I don't know if anybody in this class, and he is 330 pounds,
he's a big dude,
more explosive out of their stance. Oh, no. And that's why we wanted him to be an offensive tackle. That's why I desperately wanted him to be a tackle. And maybe he could be. But for the Chargers here, he's a guard, and he is going to not just be a good pass protector on the interior, but a devastating run blocker as well.
Yeah. And I have seen some people question his length a little bit, and I have been told that he's been verified at over 34 inch arms as well. So I don't think length is an issue, and foot speed's not an issue. And I think those are the two things that I care about. I mean, I'm going to scratch that. I don't give a crap that much about length. There are some short arm tackles out there who have really good knee bend and who have really good foot speed. I think Savannah has one of those things plus length. So Yeah. I think the length will help him cure some stiffness in his ankles and in his hips a little bit. But inside at guard, and I also, how much do you think them kicking him left side, right side hurt him in 2024?
Oh, his left tackle tape's not good. I think
they kicked him back and forth all the time, just like
I think it hurt. I think if you would have kept him just on the right side, he would have looked a lot better. But the oversetting thing is still there on the right side too.
So. It's also worth noting that as a freshman, he played left or right guard as well. Who's their starting right guard? So he's got experience playing guard. So Kelvin Banks, this is where Kelvin Banks is coming off the board here to the Washington Commanders. I do think that they could go wide receiver too, but man, we went on a huge run of wide receivers in the first round already with those top three guys coming off the board. So I don't see it. And they could go corner as well. We've had four corners come off the board. So just a lot. I mean, they could go like Maxwell Harrison or something like that here as well, if they wanted to go corner, but I think protecting Jaden Daniels, their prized possession, is probably a much needed thing to do in this case. And their offensive line outside of Sam Cosmi is pretty patched together. Like Tyler Biadasz is playing center. They've been starting Brandon Coleman at left tackle, a rookie, day three rookie, who has looked like a day three rookie. So like there are things to address along that offensive line outside of their right guard play, which is good in Sam Cosmi. And so they're going to take Kelvin Banks here with the idea that you play left tackle, because I think the other guys are serviceable. They're serviceable offensive linemen outside of left tackle. You take it with the idea that you play him where he played in college, even though I do think his arms are 33 inches, which is fine. I do question how heavy his feet are. Again, I think he's in a guard's body. Like his lower half is super dense and pretty explosive linearly when he's putting his first foot out and he plays balance. So like his floor is high as a run blocker. But I again, not seeing him set vertically, set 45 consistently is it's a huge pet peeve of mine on his tape. And then when we did see him see his quarterbacks kind of having to hold the ball for 3-4 seconds was that Georgia game, the first Georgia game. And I thought that was a really big struggle for him to hold his own against Mykael Williams, to hold his own against Jalen Walker. So I think that's why, I know you're similarly as low on him as I am, but that's why he's not coming off the board for us here until then. But I think the Commanders have both needs at guard and tackle that they could get the most out of him at either of those spots. If it doesn't work out at left tackle, cool. You have a pathway to kick inside.
With the 27th pick, probably my least favorite pick in this entire mock draft, but I kind of felt like I had to do it. It is Purdue right tackle moving to right guard in this instance, Marcus Bowe. I hate it because he is 300 pounds. I think that he would be an outstanding center, but Tyler Linderbaum is a pretty good center for the Baltimore Ravens, and Daniel Falele, who is 380 pounds, is not a good guard for them. And I think when you look at that, or when you look at him specifically, you would think a 380 pounder gotta be a good run blocker, right? No, he's terrible. And this is me, like, I don't want to be mean to any NFL player because they are at the pinnacle of their sport and better athletes than me. But he is very replaceable, and I don't love any of the other guard options this high. Maybe Jonah Jackson from Ohio State, but I can't go there because I feel more comfortable moving Bo from right tackle to right guard than I do Jackson from left guard to right guard in this instance.
Yeah. And Bo did start at right guard his first year.
And Bo did start at right guard already. So
I also thought it was very funny that you said Jonah Jackson when it's because he's a former Ohio State guard.
Yeah,
that's
why I got it. Yes. Definitely not Jonah Jackson, but Jonah Jackson ended up being a really good player at the NFL level.
Yeah, and then he went to Los Angeles and they tried to make him play center. It didn't work very well this year for him. So. 28 Philadelphia Eagles, keeping the meme alive here of the Georgia to Philadelphia pipeline here. This is another player that is probably going to go much earlier than we have him mocked, but a player that Dalton and I both kind of think like is going to get overdrafted. Like, yeah, he's an athletic freak and he's built like an alien. And that's Mykael Williams. to upgrade the Eagles pass rush situation right here, adding another Georgia player to that roster. I think my biggest gripe with Mike Hill, yes, I see the athletic traits. Yes, I see he's in an alien's body. I see the first step explosiveness, the length, the ability to get into dude's chest. He's an extraordinary edge setter, very good at holding his own against the run. Lock peak shed, great. I watched 5 games. I counted 1 pass rush rep he won along the outside shoulder. I don't know. And you can question his pass rush plan as well, because I think that's very underdeveloped as well, his ability to actually put a plan together and know how to attack a guy across from him. But if he's going to be limited to specifically winning through the chest or along the inside track, I think that's going to significantly stunt his ceiling. And I think it's his ankles. And I don't know how much more room there is for him to flex out his ankles any more than he can already. So I think that's my biggest issue and why I'm a little bit lower on Mykael Williams and why he's 28th in this mock draft.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they tried it with bendy edge rusher Nolan Smith Jr. And listen, I love Nolan Smith, but he hasn't been great for Philadelphia, to my knowledge. And so they go with somebody who is, in my opinion,
sturdy.
Quite stiff.
Yeah,
but he's got 35 3/4 inch arms or something like that. Like he's
a freak.
He's built like a freak.
Yeah.
Number 29. Matt Milano has struggled to stay healthy. Unfortunately, great football player, safety convert down to linebacker. We're going to take another linebacker here. I would love to go corner. I would love to go a couple of different positions. Corner specifically is one I just don't mess with the Buffalo Bills. They just find guys.
They find them.
And yeah. And this is what we talk about with cornerbacks specifically, is it is so, so scheme dependent. Mm-hmm. You will take a guy who, that guy can't play. Are you kidding me? He's 160 pounds. And they'll make it work because he fits what they want to do specifically. That's why we see guys change teams or change defensive coordinators and go from being one of the better corners in the league to out. And you know, confidence is a huge thing with corners too. Anyways, Jihad Campbell, my linebacker one from the University of Alabama, an already great coverage linebacker. The growth from him this year was astronomical. He is built like an absolute freak of nature. You guys remember that from Tremaine Edmonds. He is not as young as Tremaine Edmonds was coming out of Virginia Tech, but he has a little bit of work on the edge as well, played a little bit of sand, can rush the passer a little bit, has length, is an absolute bullet at the second level. He's a really fun player overall, and that's where Buffalo goes here.
I love it. Milano stays healthy. Milano can play Will and Campbell can play Mike. If Milano can stay healthy, I don't question Campbell's ability to play Will at all either, based on how well he can backpedal and how well he can carry the seam. So I love it. 30, Minnesota Vikings. The Minnesota Vikings here, I feel bad about not taking a corner. But again, we've had a big run on corner. And I like Maxwell Hairston, but again, he's in a very rail thin. He's not Emmanuel Forbes territory, but he's a tiny dude. And he dealt with some injury stuff this year, and that kind of scares me off a little bit, no matter how twitchy he is and explosive he is. The Minnesota Vikings are getting good work out of Aaron Jones this season after he signed over from Green Bay, and they're even finding some stuff with Cam Akers, which is surprising to me, that he's able to find some success there as well. But I think Minnesota's in a place that can take a luxury pick. And this would be the best player left on my board that hasn't come off the board yet on my big board. 17th ranked player in this class for me, and that's Caleb Johnson, the running back out of Iowa. An ideal scheme fit for Kevin O'Connell in that offense. Gives you some long term running back stability. Smooth as butter. No, he doesn't have explosive long speed. But again, man, 6'2", 225, and he's so light on his feet. We've talked so much about him. I think he's got soft hands out of the backfield when he is checked down to. They're not going to manufacture touches for him out of the backfield the way some of these other running backs can do. But, man, his eyes, his patience, his vision, his footwork is just – it's all there. It's all there for him to be a 5-yard per carry back at the next level. Like, and so I'm going to go there with the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes. It makes a ton of sense for me. Let's ride with running back. First of all, taking a luxury pick, in Minnesota, but that team is set up really well. And KOC, God, what a coach. What a coach, dude. He's proven to be. Number 31. This one was difficult. I was trying to choose between two different edge rushers. And then I remembered Dan Campbell is pretty much a professional wrestler. And Landon Jackson, the edge rusher from Arkansas, had an NIL deal as a WWE future. So Landon Jackson, edge rusher from Arkansas, is going to be the guy opposite of Aiden Hutchinson. And there's a little bit of precedent here. Aiden Hutchinson, what, 6'7"? I mean, a huge, huge dude. He's 6'6 or 6'7". Landon Jackson listed at 6'7". Believe he is closer to 6'5". But both guys are about 270 pounds. Both guys have natural bend to their game as well. He's not the same level prospect as Aiden Hutchinson is, but he can be a very good complement, not just as a pass rusher or run defender, but both. And on top of that, has the athleticism and the reactive athleticism to survive in coverage. And he won't have to do that very much in Detroit, if at all, but he has that athletic ability. And that is impressive at 270 pounds.
Also, is great for Detroit and for Landon Jackson is that Za'Darius Smith is still under contract for another year as well. So he can start his career as a rotational player, as a DPR, and really get his feet wet before he is tasked with throwing himself in.
His bend and his ability to win the outside arc, the outside track
at that size is unreal. It's
a lot of fun. It's
nasty
fun to watch him.
Yeah. 32, last pick of the draft here. Kansas City Chiefs. I know they just took a young but very raw offensive tackle, and he's been benched already this year. I believe on multiple occasions since Kingsley Suamatia. They've tried it with Wanye Morris. I went back and forth here between Armon Membau, but again, even Cam Williams is still on the board here for us too. I struggle kicking right tackles left. I do. You know, I know Tristan Wirfs has done it really well. Tristan Wirfs is also a one-of-one athlete.
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit different. And so with that being said, I went ahead and mocked him, a guy who's played left tackle his entire career at the University of Oregon, and a guy that we both came in the season like, this guy's got some issues with his hands and with his core. He's like on a sled most of the time in 2023, but 2024 his tape is a lot better, mainly because he fixed a lot of his hand issues. Still some room to improve his core, but that's Oregon's Josh Connerly Jr. here to upgrade that offensive line here and get them a true left tackle. And you know, how much more patient can they be with Kingsley Suamatia? Juwan Taylor, I believe, has 2 years left, but he has some outs left in his contract. So maybe Kingsley could play right tackle where he played at BYU. And so there are some things that Kansas City could do for the long term at the offensive tackle position here by selecting Josh Connerly with the 32nd overall pick.
And that is it. That is all 32 selections. We went through 1 through 16 earlier. Yesterday, we reviewed them at the beginning of this podcast, and then we went through 17 through 32. Corey, what was your favorite pick of the back half of this
draft? I mean, Emin Wori is... Emin Wori or Caleb Johnson, probably in the war to Seattle, or Caleb Johnson to Minnesota. I love those two fits.
Yeah, for me, it's Emin Wori. And if Emin Wori doesn't go here, he goes no lower than Washington. Because there's no way Dan Quinn looks at him and says no to him. No way.
Even Jesse Minter in Seattle or Los Angeles could do it. But I guess they have Derwin James, and that's kind of the same situation. But yeah, phenomenal football player. Phenomenal fit. Mm-hmm. What about some guys that aren't selected that you'd like to talk about that we didn't mock that top 32?
Isaiah Bond, I think is number one. Don't put him in your first round mock drafts anymore. There's just no way. Not after what we saw. Don't know Phil DeClaire. I imagine he probably won't at this point, but I don't really know what his options are because I don't know if Texas is going to have him back. So I would not go there with him. Other than that, man,
here's a hypothetical Here's a hypothetical. If Drew Aller would change his mind, do you think he would have mocked him somewhere in this first round?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I would have. And it
probably the Jets at 7? Or would it be the Browns at 2?
It might have been the Browns at 2. Well, you were choosing for that.
Yeah. But I mean, I see it on the tool perspective, but boy, that would be... I think he's better off going back to Penn State and playing rather than coming to the NFL and sitting.
Yeah.
We could probably do a whole episode on Drew Aller and what he should do. But yeah.
Yeah, he wouldn't have gone any lower than 6 for me to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, are they going to take Cam Ward over Drew Aller? Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't.
I don't think I would either.
It's just, for me, as much as I want Cam Ward to succeed, I've seen the same player for 3 years.
5 years.
Yeah, but I didn't really watch much Incarnate Word. I did watch a little bit of Incarnate Word when he was a sophomore, but same guy.
Cam Williams is the guy I was like, I really think he's going to be a first round pick, but he's hurt in the playoffs now, and his play did kind of plateau, and he is really raw, and he is really young, and so like, there are a lot of question marks there that I have to deal with, even if I do love the athletic raw traits.
Yeah, maybe he goes back.
Yeah, maybe. All right, man.
That's it.
Good work. Good work, good work, good work. Anything else to add?
I don't have anything else to add. We will be back. I actually do have something else to add, I guess. We'll be back tomorrow to preview the playoff games because we got 2 coming up.
We do indeed. Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame. Until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft Podcast.